Welcome back. However you spent that time, I hope it was settling, among other things. And as I mentioned before, I'll just move right into the sit. I think I said for those of you who are here for the first time, it's about 30 minutes. So again, I'm going to ask you to drop the gaze or close your eyes. And allow the body to come into a posture that allows you to feel upright and alert. And as I mentioned before, this doesn't have to be sitting. It's just more this energetic inclining towards being available to your own experience, to these teachings. This makes sense, but sort of it's allowing there to be enough settling such that there is an availability for this awareness. Sometimes when there's so much static in the mind or agitation in the body, it's really hard to be available, right? So for myself in the beginning of a sit, just to sort of drop, invite the energy to drop down, I will often start with sort of a little bit of pressure on the balls of my feet, just connecting to the earth again as a way of just saying here, land here, allowing the attention just to move down into the lower half of the body. And for our anchor today, to sort of two steps. The first step, as I was pointing to, just to allow there to be an arriving in the body, dropping the attention down from the, for many of us can just see a lot of energy in the head, just dropping it down. And as I said before, resting the attention again in the lower half of the body, those strong legs, the pelvic bowl, and the feet. And part two of the anchor, as I believe we did last week, to stay with watching the mind. So if we sort of position ourselves anchored in the body. John Travis said to me, I quote this often early on in my retreat. We used to do interviews right in the beginning, and he had said, we take our seat and watch the theater of our mind. So on this day, a similar invitation as we land and allow ourselves to have some modicum of rest in the body. And then being able to watch the mind from this place of real curiosity and gentleness of, okay, what's this movie going to look like? Again, setting aside any judgments or opinions about how the mind should be, or in a meditation class, it should look like this or feel like that. But rather bringing a kind of bright curiosity. How is it in the mind? And again, I think I'm echoing much, some of what I shared in the instructions last week, but sort of the image of the mind is the blue sky. And watching these thought patterns like clouds as they drift forward through across the sky. With a curiosity to, oh, what shape are these clouds? If we stay with that image, what's the pattern of these thoughts? And if we want to, it could have that be the anchor. And if you want to add one more dimension in that question, what's the pattern of these thoughts or the tone. Trying to stay out of content because we're just observing. And then noting as we kind of follow that cloud thought, so to speak. Is it stressful? Is there a constriction that comes as that thought pattern moves through? Or is there ease? So there are kind of three steps, one allowing that some attention to stay in the body so we're anchored. Second is just watching these thought patterns, clouds, if that's helpful, waves on the ocean, if that image is more helpful. Sometimes they could happen really quickly, or they just swirl about like an eddy. But that third question, does this feel stressful or does it feel more ease? And does following this thought pattern take me into a constricted, stressful energetics? Or does following this thought train, noticing this thought pattern, is there an ease? And really letting that be the question, just a curiosity. What is the pattern? How do the patterns of the mind impact the body? Or even the mind state itself, does it lead to a greater agitation in the mind, or is there a settling, a unifying? And if this feels like way too much instruction, just let it go and just let the attention just kind of watch the thoughts. Please know there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, and we see how it is to be with ourselves, with our thoughts, moment to moment. Knowing in any moment we can begin again. Oh, it's like this. And now it's like this. So thank you. Please feel my gratitude for this opportunity we have to sit together. Thank you, Carlita, for ringing the bell. And always so lovely to sit together. And I hope, however, the sit went. Sometimes they're pleasant, sometimes they're not. But just that there's a sense of, again, the word that's coming up a lot for me today is sort of a settling into ourselves, into the moment, into the teachings, really. So we are still on this arc of working with the 10 perfections of the heart, the paramis, and the book that I've been drawing from primarily has been Ajahn Sucitto's book, The Paramis, which when it's blurry, it doesn't help, but it's an available online. Parami, Ways to Cross Life's Floods by Ajahn Sucitto. And so the 10 perfections we started with generosity, dana, the opening of the heart, and then integrity. Which I think in some ways it's like the North Star of aligning ourselves with what we most hold dear in values and living the life of the blameless, so to speak. The third is renunciation. And I was listening to a talk this morning by Ajahn Sucitto, and he had made the comment that renunciation is good, it's a good idea and an important, obviously, teaching, but really 90% of the time you can't do it, which I thought was great. It's like we're just, for whatever reason, we're not really ready to let go, or it's hard to let go, or we get caught, but it's aspirationally excellent. And just like cracked up when I heard that of like, thank you. And just the building in the aspiration to let go, to have restraint, and how challenging it can be, in part because the habit mind can be so conditioned, or the craving patterns are so strong, or the aversive patterns are so strong. And so I bring that in just as a way of sort of easing, like, yeah, it's hard, right? It's hard. And then today, playing with the notion of wisdom. And there's lots of things I want to say. Let me pull from what he shares there in the teachings. That's Panya. The Pali word is Panya, Panna. This is the discriminative faculty that operates through discernment or clarity, rather than a learned store of knowledge. It's a faculty that we all already have. To quote the Buddhist scriptures, wisdom and consciousness are co-joined. In other words, wherever there is consciousness, there is wisdom, because wisdom is the faculty that makes distinctions between pleasure and pain, safe and threatening. What I really appreciate this as a beginning, sort of a starting off point, is what may seem obvious, but this real distinction between what is wisdom and what is information. And even people that can be smart, but they might not be wise. And we live in a culture that is knowledge at our fingertips. We're not the wisest, at least in the dominant the culture, not the wisest. And how do we cultivate within ourselves our own familiarity with our own wisdom, that notion that it's already here, which I think is such a blessing of all these teachings, that it is already all here. There's our innate Buddha nature, and it's just a kind of constant clearing away of the hindrances or the things that cloud the mind or obscure the purity of the heart. And this inside practice of really settling in and looking at, where do I get caught? Which was in part of those instructions of watching the mind patterns. When I was doing myself, it was kind of fun to just sort of like stress, like thought stresses, thought ease, and then being able to kind of counterbalance. And I've shared this little, I'm hoping it's a fact. I haven't yet to be able to substantiate it. But I heard it in a Dharma talk of someone saying that back when we used to send the space shuttle up to the International Space Station, 97 or 95% of the time it was off course. So it was always course correcting. And I love this. Even if it's not true, just the metaphor of it. And that I was finding that as I was working with my thought, observing my thoughts in this in the sit of when it would sort of the naming of stress and then okay, course correct away from that. And as a way of kind of an easy-ish or simple, say that, a simple way of kind of redirecting when we can name like, oh, this thought really stresses me out. Okay, stop thinking it. And it can have that kind of renunciation quality, like that's easy to do, or easy to say, not so easy to do, but kind of with practice, just to let go a little bit. And it might just be for a moment and then it comes back. But that freedom that can come from that, oh, there's a moment. Okay. And then I can ease into that place of where is their ease and where is their stress. So back to the book, the human mind is a mixed blessing. We can witness our instincts and responses and discern what is good, appropriate, and skillful from what is not. We can get so thrown around by what we think we should be and what we fear we might be and the ways we wish other people would be that we lose the balance of clarity. So with the human mind, it's imperative to develop the wisdom faculty in the right way. This entails balancing the need for ideas, aims, and procedures with the understanding of how all this mental stuff affects us, right? So that noting, is this leading me into stress? Is this leading me into ease? Is helpful, right? Much as the Vedanas, the second foundation of mindfulness, those feeling tones, is this pleasant? Is this unpleasant? Or is this neutral? Super helpful as a way of kind of course correcting, even if it's just in the moment, and being able to land of, okay, I can stay steady because I have these landmarks to be able to judge with whether this is leading on the road of stress or leading on the way to ease. Without balance, we get so top heavy and so contrived that getting through a day is a major undertaking. So it's essential to develop the wisdom that oversees or transcends mind consciousness with its values and dogmatic biases. Compassion, depressions, it's love, it's less. This idea of being able to drop out of or above or through to pierce through the static of the mind. And the deity, I suppose, Manjushara, who has the sort of clarity, that one, to cut through the static, to cut through the ignorance, greed, hatred, delusion. I think for as householders, I find it just really helpful to sort of be able, again, to kind of cut through the static of the mind when there's just all this noise. It's perseverating here, it's thinking about this, it's worrying about that. There's just all this chatter. That's not helpful and not onward leading. It's not in a stream that leads to wisdom or to being able to establish the clarity of mind. So this, we can sort of imagine the sword coming through, just like stop, as a way of getting more clear. And for me, wisdom, some of its close cousins, there are synonyms, siblings, are this the notions of clarity and balance, equanimity. Often when I've taught with wisdom and equanimity, part of me is like, is there much of a difference? Again, equanimity is a distinct heart, one of the distinct paramis, but I think at their felt experience, they're very similar because it's being able to stay steady, it's being able to stay balanced. It's being able to hold on to ourselves in the face of all the chaos and externalities of the world when things are just not going the way we want them to go. Okay, how do we come back into a place of steadiness and balance, which it has certainly that flavor of equanimity and wisdom, because with wisdom, there's an ability to see through, oh yeah, this is just all this external stuff that does that my sense of steadiness is not dependent upon. Thank goodness, right? Because rarely do the external circumstances line up since they're like, great, that will work to line up in that way. In the teachings, classically, wisdom is sort of, there are stages of it, an understanding of the teachings, an understanding of ourselves, how do our thought patterns work. It's not so much a gathering of knowledge for knowledge's sake, but just being able to have a deeper understanding of what these teachings are about. So this first layer of wisdom is really an understanding of it's a learning, it's conceptual wisdom or theory, that which you might obtain from a book or listening to talks. The second is the wisdom of practice, right? You put it into practice, it's work. And these Buddha's really clear. If it doesn't work, let it go. Try it, come. Ehipasuka, come check it out. If it doesn't work, let it go. A way of directly applying this theory. So if it worked in the instructions to sort of name, oh, this thought stream, this thought pattern just stresses me out. This thought pattern, well, there's more ease. That's the practice. And then when we're not on the cushion, it's even more helpful to be able to catch it. Like, oh, wait, I'm totally stressing myself out by thinking this thought. Okay, can I come back to the body, feel my feet, and can I course correct? The third is the wisdom of realization. It's a confident, clear, peaceful knowing that stands outside of opinions, reactions, and biases. It's a kind of knowing that just knows. That something is or is not so. It is the purity of knowing that provides release from confusion and stress. And to me, that really feels like that's Somewhat of the promised land, even if it's just for a moment, but to have that release from confusion of stress because there's a clarity of, oh, I understand what's going on. I know, I can feel it. I know what's going on. And that felt sense, that knowing can only come when there's not that static and the distraction and the mind sort of running all over the place. So how we cultivate a sense of inner steadiness and slowing down such that we can have that access to the clarity. And again, remember in that very early opening, talking about from the book of it's, we already have it. It's innate. There's no like going out trying to find it. It's more remembering and clearing the path to be able to come back into that place of deep knowing, that connection to our own wisdom. I'm gonna be a little heavy on the book today because I do love it. Wisdom is not just a matter of refined intellect. Psychopaths and dictators can be very cunning. Again, it's not clever, it's not necessarily smart, but it's our ability to evaluate mind states as they are felt in the present moment. And so, as a rule of thumb, if it doesn't support the other parami, so say truthfulness, patience, generosity, loving kindness, it isn't real wisdom. It's just an opinion. Right? And again, being able to slow down enough to watch what's happening in the mind, to be able to see the nuances of what's reactions, what's versus opinions, versus when we hold on dogmatically, I'm right, you're wrong, the othering that can happen. All of that would be fair enough to kind of put in the category of sort of unwise thought, unwise thinking, unskillful thinking, where we're just caught. And when we can have the kind of fierceness of opinion, right? It's like that. Okay, can I loosen that a little? That line that I quote from the Metta Sutta all the time, it is said to be the sublime abiding, those who do not hold on to fixed views in that way, that the righteousness of our opinion, which is not to say there's not, we don't lose sense of our discernment. We hold on to that. Discernment is an essential component or close relative to wisdom as a way of being able to determine, is this a path of skillfulness, a path of truth and honesty, path of goodness, wholesomeness? Or is this just chaos and greed and bad behavior? But again, having a sense of being able to slow down enough, have that insight such that that clear seeing is possible. And we can have moments of it. And let's celebrate those moments. Yeah. Because the confusion and the busyness of the mind can be so, we can be so habituated to it. There are just a couple of lines that I would like to share. If you let the process unfold, this way of being able to see what the patterns of the mind are and catching where we are, you'll find that you do good things because some of the identity with being good, like following that sense of this is ease, this is wholesome, because it starts to feel good in a reliable and holistic way. This is good for others. This is good for me. You feel confident about being able to make good choices of where to put both the mind's energies, but also our actions. What is of immediate and discernible relevance is whether your own mind is in a skillful or unskillful state. Yeah. He talks about meeting the waves by which the external world is not going the way we want it to, or just the stressors of that can come, whether it's financial or work or whatever it is, or internally. We all know what those are like. And how do we meet those waves? Insight doesn't try to smash the waves down or straighten out the sea. It doesn't build walls or retreats. It just stands on the true ground of awareness and lets the waves pass through a moment at a time. This strengthens access to a ground where the untrained mind can find only unsure footing. So a wise person delights in meeting the waves because this is how the true strength and beauty of the mind comes forth. Right? There's that. A Tibetan prayer, like, may I have enough difficulty to be able to cultivate the purest qualities of the mind, right? So that's not a prayer I often undertake, but just how can we develop our capacity to have a sense to be able to meet the challenges that come our way with a sense of the steadiness of ground? The shift from an ability just to slow down to see. What is the wise course of action? Okay, I am gonna shift for a moment. Yeah, let's do an exercise. I'm gonna again invite you to close your eyes.
And again, kind of feel into your body sitting here. I want to first ask to call for this idea of the wise person and who in your life kind of fits that description. And it could be someone that you know. It could be an author. It could be a teacher. It could be ancestors. It could be relatives. It could be an animal. But when you think about inviting in, as if we're sort of calling an inner council of our of wise companions that may lead us. Who shows up? Friends, relatives, people that you know, people that you don't know, teachers. And even backing up a little bit of what does that even mean to have the wise person? And for each of us, it probably means something different. Someone who may be trustworthy, who is steady. Kind of fleshing in that definition of what does it mean when you think of who a wise person is. Sort of opening up that door to whoever meets that description to come in. And imagining this group of wise beings sitting around you. Just taking in, what is it about this person or that person that resonates as, quote, wise? And if for some reason they're having trouble pulling in actual people, just imagine like who, what a wise person would emanate. How might you feel in their presence? It might be that more people kind of keep coming in, or it might just be one or two people. And the thread I'm inviting you to kind of find is a sense of what is it about these individuals, these beings, again, that you may know or that you've never met, that resonate as wise. As you take your place in the circle of these wise beings, yeah. That which you see in others is also within you. Those beings that we pull in or that came in, that we invited in, are reflecting what is innately true to ourselves, the qualities we have within ourselves. And they may
be able to reflect it in a way that deeply resonates. And this invitation, we take in who showed up as our inner wise committee. So it is externally, so it is within. And to almost feel yourself drinking in these qualities of wisdom from these other beings. Just that your wise internal being is so deeply nourished. That you can tap into, even embody this wisdom for yourself. And just so this image of sort of drinking in, allowing yourself to take this fullness of wisdom, as reflected perhaps by this inner committee internally into the heart. Oh, yeah, this is true. This is how it feels when I stand in my wise self, when I can embody and connect to my own innate wisdom, buoyed by compassion and truthfulness, joy, integrity, generosity. Claiming this wisdom quality as a birthright, feeling it in the posture of the body, feeling it through the core, feeling it almost like a wash of warm water in the brain, the soothing any anxious or anxiety that might be there. This beautiful wash of wisdom that moves through the body. And how does that feel? How do you feel in your body when you allow yourself to connect to this wisdom, this clarity of seeing, this insight, this steadiness of mind, this balance? And how might you move in the world from this place? How you would engage with family and friends, coworkers, perhaps more importantly, how do you feel in your own body when you let yourself stand and claim this heart quality of wisdom? The congruence of the mind and the heart and the body that can move and respond with skillfulness and clarity in this moment and in another moment. And when we stumble and get caught, we can regroup, right? We can course correct. We know we're going to get thrown off course. Okay, we can come back because we're familiar enough with the embodied sense of our own wisdom. It's lingering here just for a few more moments. You allow yourself to really marinate in this capacity for wisdom and clarity and balance. To take in one more time this council of wise beings that came, that are always available. It's helpful to kind of really take in the faces or images of this wisdom council, knowing that they are merely reflecting your own qualities of wisdom, and also knowing their support is available. I'm going to stop here for today, and thank you so much for your kind attention.